You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Derek here of Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network. Nominations are open for Best Local Podcast in Kansas City at thepitchkc.com/bestofkc19. Please consider going to the Arts and Entertainment section and voting for Screen Heroes as the Best Local Podcast of Kansas City in 2019. Nominations are open until July 8th, so please get your nomination in as soon as possible. Thank you for your consideration. Hey everybody, Derek here from Screen Heroes. Just a quick heads up, the first 4 minutes of the podcast, the audio is a little clunky for Ryan and myself. Ray sounds fine. But at about the 4.5 minute mark, it gets significantly better because during the live stream, someone pointed that out to us. And so the first, 4 minutes or so are kind of edited a bit. So if you don't want to just skip past those, that's fine. We just could talk about some news. So it does get better. Just want to give you a warning for that. In this week's episode, we're doing our Fill Our Holes retro review, Ryan's pick of Kick-Ass 2. We also talk Kick-Ass 1 and a bunch of news. So let's do it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Screen Heroes. I am Ray, one of your hosts every week. Oh, my God. And I'm here with my other two weekly hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hi.
How are you all tonight?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
Doing good.
Yeah, not too bad.
This week, the theme was Kick-Ass. And actually, it started out being Kick-Ass 2 because Derek and I ended up missing it in 2013 when it came out. And
but you enjoyed the original.
We did.
And so, yeah.
Absolutely. But
so disappointing that you missed it.
It was. It really was. 2013 was a rough year. But we all just prepped and watched both. So we might as well just talk about both movies, yeah, you know? Might as well. So every week we talk news. Let's do that. So
we've done this 160 four times.
It was very distracting that you weren't saying anything.
Yeah, you were
so
super silent.
Sorry. So we streamed this live on Twitch, and I had to fix the stream title.
You know, I just expect everybody to pull their own weight on the show. That's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, if only I didn't handle all of the tech.
Woe is me. All right, so Dark Phoenix had the largest drop on the second week than any other superhero movie has ever had.
71.5%.
Bigger than any other superhero movie ever?
That's
insane. BVS had the record at 60.5 or something like that back when it came out. That was a really big deal.
Well, I know what that drop was. Ian only saw it once.
Shout out to Ian from Echo Station, our Star Wars podcast, who has seen Dark Phoenix now voluntarily and paid for it 3 times.
I thought he only paid for it twice.
Yeah, he got a
screener. Oh, okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I wish we had seen it for free.
We reviewed it last week with Ian on the show, so if you're curious what our clearly glowing reviews were of the film.
Yeah.
Ian said it was his second favorite X-Men film, and I...
That makes you want to cry, especially.
I don't know how to process that.
I mean, on the podcast, to be honest with you.
He's not going to listen to this, so it won't matter.
But we can stick with the box office news. So a couple movies opened this weekend. Well, three movies opened this weekend, worth noting anyway. Men in Black International, which won the box office with just over 30 million.
Ooh, so no one saw movies this weekend.
So, I mean, we saw that one, but Shaft came in sixth place opening weekend with just 8.9 million, with Dark Phoenix actually beating Shaft, a Samuel L. Jackson movie.
Which, shut your mouth.
Yeah. And then all the way at number 12, even though it was more of a limited release, and when I say that, I mean Men in Black was in 4,200 screens, Shaft was in 2,900, this was only in 600. Which was The Dead Don't Die, which is the Bill Murray, Adam Driver zombie film. And that only made $2.5 million. So
I imagine that one was pretty low budget, though, other than the salaries.
Yeah.
I would think so.
It is considered an indie film.
It's a focus film, so it's an independent film. It's not meant to compete.
But really, that one had high reviews. Critics are really loving that one.
I haven't looked at the reviews, so I'm glad to know that they love it.
Yeah.
We thought about going and seeing it last weekend, but
so Titans dropped some news. They cast Aqualad this week. And they also released a photo of Superboy.
I think it was on somebody's personal Instagram.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, spoiler alert if you haven't seen Titans season one. But yeah, so at the very end, they show like the lower half of Superboy. And it's freakishly big. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger on even bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger big. On the edge of believability muscular. Like, it's crazy. And this guy that they cast, there's no way that's his legs. Like, I'm just going to be honest with you. It's impossible.
Yeah.
But he's wearing a Superboy. His outfit looks like the, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just t-shirt and blue pants, I guess. But
Aqualad totally resembles the more comic book look of Aquaman. So
is Aqualad black in the comics or white?
There are two Aqualads. Okay. And
I'm used to the Young Justice one, I guess. Yeah,
Calderon is a black man. And the other guy who goes on to become Tempest is white. So okay. I assume they're going with that one.
Seems that way.
Missed opportunity, I think. But
yeah, probably.
Calderon would have been much cooler. He's a more fan favorite.
Maybe they didn't want him because he's already in Young Justice, and Young Justice is still currently on now.
It is.
They didn't want two incarnations of him. Not that there aren't two incarnations of, say, Dick Grayson or something like that, but, you know.
Whatever their reasoning for it, it could, most likely, it's a way to distinguish him from Aquaman. From Jason Momoa,
yeah.
I mean, I feel like a black man probably would have distinguished him.
I completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. So Jason Momoa has said that he wants to be the new Wolverine, which the internet told him to shut the fuck up and be Sabretooth instead.
Check his privilege.
Yeah, people even showed fan art of him as Sabretooth, and I'm on board. Like, he looks amazing.
I like how we went with, like, so Hugh Jackman obviously is larger than the Wolverine in the comic books and the cartoon and everything. So we've decided, well, we already went big. Let's just go bigger.
Yes. All the bigness.
I just don't like the idea of having like seven actors be every hero in across Marvel and DC, because it seems like there's a lot of them that are doing both at this point.
Oh yeah,
and it's getting to be more and more common. You know, I'd rather just get new actors, fresh faces, whatever. I like Jason Momoa, but you know, let somebody else take a shot.
Which is why I also don't want him to take over a new property. Sabretooth is never going to get a spinoff movie. It's never going to happen. If he appears as a villain instead of a hero, if he appears in heavy prosthetics and makeup, then like it is enough differentiation for me. But like if he takes over for Wolverine, then another potential 9 films, I guess. So what's...
I guess that's called like hedging your bets, right?
Like it's he wants constant job security.
Work. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I can understand that to an extent.
And right now, since the DC universe is kind of in limbo, you know.
Well, see, that's the thing. You would think it's in limbo, but they keep churning out movies. They just don't know what they're doing.
Right.
So it's totally
different.
They
have no
plan. Right.
Right.
Totally different than limbo.
They could pull the Marvel thing and just like with each new movie retcon something from the past, and that's how Marvel solves all of its problems.
Pretty much. DC has done some of that
already.
So.
I'm actually curious how much Birds of Prey and Suicide Squad 2 are going to retcon.
The Suicide Squad sequel reboot.
Get over it. There We've already talked about this.
I'm just saying you can't have it both ways. It's one or the other.
I mean,
we'll see when the movie comes out.
So
this is a movie.
MTV Movie Awards occurred,
which I didn't even know.
I didn't know until I started seeing pictures from it this morning.
Yeah. Some cool things happened. Brie Larson won for best
stunt sequence.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, she brought her two stunt people up there, and it just proves that the stunt, group, department, whatever you want to call it, stunt workers, are completely overlooked by most people, by most awards, and then... it also shows that three women played the Captain Marvel role, so not everyone's capable of doing so many crazy things. Like Brie Larson trained for almost a year, and still she wasn't able to do some of the stuff. And
the sequence that they picked at one was kind of ridiculous too. It was the Minerva fight, which is like barely even a fight.
I was more just impressed with what she did than like the,
I mean, it's voted on by the fans, so whatever.
Right.
Now, but to be fair, it's not always that an actor can or cannot perform something. Sometimes it's an insurance issue.
Oh, absolutely.
About losing your lead. Right. So Brie Larson may be capable of doing most or all of those things, but Marvel wasn't going to lose their first lead female superhero to a broken leg or something.
That's totally fair. It's usually a lot of people only have one stunt double. Oh, yeah. Two. So it just proves how intense the Captain Marvel role was.
That's definitely for sure.
Each stunt person had their own set of skills.
But like, what I'm worried is they'll add like stunt crew, like Oscar type categories, and then Tom Cruise will win all of them is what will probably happen the first time.
It would be his first Oscar since the 80s, so maybe
he does seem very dedicated to the craft.
Speaking of stunt stuff, wasn't there something about Daredevil? What awards was that? What award was he shunned for? Which
I thought an Emmy.
Was it an Emmy?
So if you've watched Daredevil season 3, there's one episode that has a 15 minutes no cut fight sequence pretty much follows Matt Murdock through
a prison,
basically. And it's incredible. I mean, it's not the best choreographed thing I've ever seen, but in terms of technicality and like how much work went into it, it was pretty incredible. But it's not eligible for an Emmy for best stunt sequence because it's more than 3 minutes long. So realistically, I feel like some of the headlines might have blown it out of proportion a little bit. You could submit 3 minutes of it to
absolutely,
but it's, you know, the whole point is, you know, how difficult the entire sequence was.
Yeah, I mean, some of this stuff starts to look like technicalities, right? Like you look at the Lego movie, and the Lego movie was disqualified as an animated feature because it has like 3 minutes of live action at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so the fact that 96% of it is animation and stop motion and all those types of things, that's all completely wiped away because Will Ferrell shows his face for 90 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of feels like you kind of lose the spirit of what you're supposed to be celebrating.
Right.
So I get it.
Agreed.
The guidelines are there for a reason, and I'm sure that time limit was put there for some purpose. But
I mean, this is why the WAG, DAG, and SAG awards came to be, because they were so tired of having to rely on these stuffy old academies and panels that they created their own awards to award each other what they thought was good. Like last year, Bradley Cooper was snubbed at every award show except for the Directors Guild Awards. So, you know, he won that one because, and that's a little bit better in my opinion, because that's your peers recognizing your hard work. So Maybe Golden Globes will recognize it.
Maybe. I mean, the show's dead in the water, so it'd just be nice to see him get some recognition towards the end, you know?
Yeah. Have you watched any of Jessica Jones?
I've watched maybe 2 episodes. Yes, I've watched some of it, but
How's your first impressions?
I mean, it feels like Jessica Jones. It's so far so good. I mean, it's leaning into the Hellcat storyline a little bit more. I mean, she's not taking the moniker yet or anything like that, you know? But Trish Walker is a big part of the story so far, so here's hoping she gets a cowl, right?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I imagine that probably doesn't happen, but
okay. Any other news? Yes,
we had a good amount, but I mean, it's
no. I mean,
it was all mostly small stuff this week.
Yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that came out about Men in Black. It was kind of a disaster behind the scenes. So, okay, this is kind of interesting. So, apparently, Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson both were so unhappy with the way the script was being handled because it was basically two different people who had two different visions of the script and the studio just looking the other way. They hired their own dialogue writers, which honestly I did not know was a thing an actor could just go and do. I assumed that like certain people did that as part of their contracts, like Robert Downey Jr., Brad Pitt, like, you know. It didn't occur to me that you could just hire a dialogue actor if you weren't happy with the script. So that basically means at least 4 to 6 people were writing this movie with their own idea of what it should be.
Maybe it wasn't so easy. Maybe it was a breach of contract. Maybe they had to pay something to the studio to do this, but they felt so intensely about it that they did. I don't get why that movie has so much hate. Like, this is the fourth in a franchise. It's actually a continuation. It's a sequel. It's not a reboot or a remake or anything. It wasn't lifeless or completely without charm. It lived up to the Men in Black name. If you liked any of the three that came before it, chances are you're going to like some of the jokes in here. Like, it's very stereotypical Men in Black. Is it an earth-shattering movie? No. Did it change my life? Absolutely not. But did I have fun for an hour and a half? Yeah. The jokes were funny. Kumail Nanjiani was hilarious. So, like, just get over yourselves, guys. If you don't want to pay that much to see a movie you're just going to be meh about, that's fine. That's fine. But no need to bag on it. Like, you know what it is going into it. Just like the Jurassic World movies now. You know what they are. Just go. Or don't. I don't care.
I think a bunch of critics just wanted to make the Neuralizer joke, because that seemed to be what most of the headlines were about. Like, the movie was so bad, you should just neuralize me. Get it?
Guys, we're going to go on a break now, okay? We'll be right back. Enjoy this quick advertisement for Kit Kats.
Hey friends, this is Cam, one of the hosts of the Gamer Heroes podcast. We really hope you're enjoying the show you're listening to right now, and if you are, please consider becoming a patron of the Heroes Podcast Network at patreon.com/heroespodcasts. Your support would genuinely mean the world to us, and would allow us to cover hosting costs for the website, get new equipment and software, and even make it out to different conventions and events to meet you, our loyal listeners. All Patreon tiers will get you access to the Patron Lounge and Slack, which will allow you to chat and interact with your favorite HPN hosts. On behalf of everyone here at HPN, thank you all so much for your continued support. We really couldn't do any of this without you.
And we're back. I'm so sorry that wasn't Kit Kats. We pressed the wrong button. How horrible.
Next time, I pressed the right button.
No.
I did.
You didn't press the wrong button. Like, press the Kit Kat button next time.
Kit Kat doesn't give us enough money. Like, any money. So.
Rachel's working on that.
Yeah. All my sponsorships, I'm really going after that Kit Kat one. So, we're talking Kick-Ass, guys. We're talking Kick-Ass 1, Kick-Ass 2. This is part of our Fill Our Holes segment, or retro reviews, whatever you want to call it. And all three of us watched both movies. Mm-hmm. So, to prepare for this, so we're going to chat a little bit about both. Let's start. Ryan, which one's your favorite, 1 or 2?
1.
Derek. 1 or 2?
1.
Yes, 1 is the correct answer.
There's a couple of things
in 2. That is how we still be friends.
There's a couple of things in 2 that I just personally love, but the first one's definitely the better movie.
Yeah, just objectively, it's significantly better. Now, but
how would you guys rate it? Like, the scale of 1 to 10 or letter grades between the... So I know where the two sit in your...
Do we want to... Is this a spoiler? For
no, just right now, like... What, I just want to know what the gap is between quality for you. Or enjoyment. Let's say enjoyment.
I mean, not like a ton, probably like B+, B-. That's
kind of what I was thinking. I might even go up to a B, but I'll put a B+. Yeah, it's they're within the same letter.
Okay, that's cool.
Neither one is bad by any means, you know, but...
That's totally fair.
Yeah. What about you?
Oh, no, I was going to say the exact same. On my worst day, I'd probably give 2 a C, but I really enjoyed it, so it's probably more of a B.
Okay.
Like, I think maybe quality-wise of the director, since it was a different director, then yes.
You could feel that too, unfortunately.
There was some Matthew Vaughn. Bad CGI in some places as well. So that was more noticeable in the second one. And I think it's because their budget was split across adding so many more extras that they didn't have the same budget to keep up with it. But, you know, it happens. It was really only on Hit Girl's van.
Oh, yeah.
Sequence.
Well, honestly, seeing that the year it came out, it wasn't great then either.
It's not just it didn't hold up. It was bad to begin with.
Yeah, it wasn't really great. And that scene was one that they released a lot of parts of in the lead up to that movie.
Yeah, the trailers.
And the trailers and whatnot. And they were really hyping it up. And it was a cool sequence, don't get me wrong, but it was the CG was not good. Yeah.
The stunt work was really great with that sequence. The cuts were pretty impressive because it made it look like, as the best as it could, that it was all done in real time. We know it wasn't.
Right.
Well, so the spoiler warning for the 2 Kick-Ass movies at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to spoil.
My problem with a scene like that being in all the trailers, though, and the way Hit Girl's character is written in the second movie, that by the time the van scene happens, like, it's so late in the movie, you're just like constantly, like me, waiting, I was like for waiting it. For it. I'm like, yeah. When is she going to change her mind and start doing stuff, kind of thing?
Right.
Right. And it almost becomes a distraction, you know? Like, it's
your Winter Soldier Nick Fury, like, when is he gonna die, when is he gonna come back part.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you know it's going to happen, and until it does, you're just like trying to guess when it's going to happen. But yeah, I mean, so do we want to start with the first movie then?
Sure, absolutely. So what are your favorite parts for the first movie?
I really like that movie, and you know, I give it a B+. Like, it's one of my favorite superhero movies, so there's a lot of charm to it. It's tough to pick certain spots. I like Mr. Bitey. You know, the whole sequence. You know, kind of when he gets up on the thing, falls down, and then the guy trips over him, and that's his first time, like, really being a successful superhero. Mm-hmm. And calling these guys out, why are you crazy, kid? What do you do? You're gonna die for this guy? He's like, I'm not just gonna stand around and watch, you know, you three guys kill this guy while everybody watches, or whatever he says. You know, like, that was a really good scene, and that it might be my favorite. I really love the Hit Girl scene where she's going through the building. Also,
yeah,
towards the end. Yeah, there's so many good scenes though. The Big Daddy scene in the warehouse is also. I seem to really like the stunt sequences, apparently. No,
the fight sequences are so well coordinated, and they feel both realistic and fantastical at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Like, the movies aren't particularly CGI heavy, right? There's obviously some moments. Like, he's not actually on a jetpack, right?
Well,
right?
It's more like wire.
But that was so unexpected.
It's more like wire work and, you know, crash pads and things like that.
And I kind of like that. Like, there's some serious stuff happening. People are really dying. Lives are on the line. But it's still done more down to earth in a realistic way, where it's not just so massive and over the top that every hit just becomes meaningless.
Right.
Right. It doesn't have that.
No, it has gravity. Or gravitas.
That's it. Yeah.
Behind the hits. Yeah.
And I think that's probably what makes it the most interesting. I mean, Hit Girl is my favorite part of both movies. I think Chloe's awesome. And the fact that
that was like her first role too.
Yeah. Well, she's like 8 in the first one.
No.
No, I don't.
Is she older than that?
7 years apart. Because
Yeah, you're right. They're not 7 years apart. She looks much, much younger in the first one.
There were 3 years in between, and she went from 12 to 15.
I think she was supposed to be like 8, though. I mean, it felt like she was supposed to be very
Why
young.
Did Marcus drop her off at a high school?
She's 13. She's 13 in the first one. So she's 16 in the second one, in real life, anyway. She looks a lot younger than 13, you know, and maybe it's just because of the costume and stuff.
You slap some pigtails on anybody, they look a lot younger. It's just a childhood haircut. So it's very... innocent, I guess.
But like her fight sequences are just like they're my favorite ones in the first movie, and she's the youngest actor on set. And
yeah, that Razul scene, the very first one where you see her like come in and save Dave, that was really a really great character introduction. You got to see what she was all about like right away, and you know,
I mean, for the record, she has the best storyline throughout the two movies. It was very interesting watching her grow, because I feel like she's the only one that had a lot of personal growth between both. Like, both Red Mist and Kick-Ass had a lot of tragedy dumped in their laps, but they just had to be either a little more psycho or a little more mature, and she had to be a lot more mature and decide whether or not she wants to reclaim her life as a civilian or as a vigilante.
She's still one of the most badass superheroes in a superhero movie, like ever. Female superheroes, or really male. Like even male, like just in general. But since female superheroes is a big focus lately, like what year did that come out? 2010?
The first one was 2010.
I mean, that was before we had, you know, Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel.
And Black Widow.
Yeah, any of
I
these.
Mean, it was still pretty early in the MCU.
Year as Black Widow.
Iron Man would have been the only movie that had come out at that time. Probably maybe first.
No, Hulk and Iron Man 2 had come out in 2010. Thor and Captain America were 2011.
Okay. So, I mean, it was still pretty young in the MCU, yeah. right? And before that, what did you have? You had the Spider-Man movies,
X-Men movies
and
yeah.
the X-Men and Batman movies. Like, that was basically it. And I don't know. I think Hit Girl's character is so good in the two movies because, you know, we learn who she is in the first one. But in the second one, she actually has to deal with normal stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? Like,
which is great. Fish out of water story, classic fish out of water story. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it but works. it's fish out of water in what's totally normal for a lot right. of people, right? Right.
Everybody's used to the water, but she's not.
right. Yeah. And so, like, it makes her feel more real, whereas Red Mist and Kick-Ass are going through, like, kind of crazy stuff, especially Red Mist. I mean, he's a total nut job the entire
Absolutely.
time.
When he becomes a motherfucker, like, he's gone out of his head.
I love that they leaned into that, though, absolutely. And how ridiculous it was. Yeah, that was great.
His storyline was lifted straight from the comics. Even the rape scene, only Christopher Mintz-Plasse asked that they not do it, that he doesn't ever want to film one, so they copped out.
They didn't really cop out.
No.
I mean, that, like, was a great way of handling
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I was, before that movie came out, I was really like, what? That's such a, in the comic books, it's a really terrible scene.
Yes.
Right? He does go through with it in the comic books, and it's just a terrible thing. And mm-hmm. I did not think that was going to translate well to the movie. And thank God we didn't have to do that, you know. The way they handled it was really good. Evil has a limp dick, or whatever Night Bitch says, was great.
It, like, felt really in character for him,
absolutely,
right, regardless of the comic book, his version of the character, that felt very
well. I can't believe that he's ever been laid.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Red Best.
Well, he was kept on such a lockdown. I mean, that guy, his bodyguard followed him the entire time. Yeah. I do want to clarify when I said copped out. It's not like I actually wanted to see that happen. I meant the character.
Yes.
Yeah, so, like, actual in-universe. I apologize. That was a bad wording.
So, so something I don't want to skip over is that the two other things that make the first movie so good are two characters that can't return, which are Nick Cage and Mark Strong. And they're just both so fantastic in the first movie. They're two of my favorite actors in general anyway, so I'm kind of a sucker for their stuff. And it is not an easy task to continue the rest of the characters without those two guys.
It's funny because they're rivals, but on screen they never actually meet. They probably never even had to shoot together or saw each other on set very much because they never actually meet.
Yeah
you don't see that often. Like, it's
The Wrath of Khan.
There's a couple movies, yeah, but not many. The big thing that I loved about Big Daddy was, I mean, we Nicolas Cage right away. I mean, he was channeling Adam West.
The
right?
open scene was the shooting scene. And
right. You mm-hmm. know, I was using low velocity rounds, you find out later, in that very sad scene of his death. But yeah, he was great. The route he decided to go in, like, the Adam West Batman, like, to his voice. What am I thinking of? The
cadence and, yeah.
of his voice. You know, he did something that you don't see a lot of superheroes do. He just added a little bit to his mustache when mm-hmm. he put on the cowl, and that changed the way he looked. You know, there was a lot of really cool things done with his character, and that scene, gosh, I can't pick a favorite scene, because the scene when Hit Girl goes to save him and he's yelling to her and smiling while he's on fire. I mean, it was very classic Nick Cage, like mm-hmm. crazy Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah.
But it was perfect for that scene. I don't think they could have done it in a better way.
No, he brought his A game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without and he wasn't a doubt. Really a star in it. Like, he was very much just a supporting character, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. It's not his story, although it should be. And they've talked for many years about doing a Big Daddy Hit Girl prequel to show, like, their progression, mm-hmm. more of her training when she was, like, 5 or 6, when it gets out.
You have to recast.
You do have Hit to recast, Girl
and probably Chloe. I mean, probably Nick Cage too, because I don't know that he could pull off a lot younger. He's gotten a lot older.
Yeah, you're looking at de-aging about 20.
You
to
could
de-age years.
Cage the way you de-age adult actors, right? With the digital AI stuff.
They don't have Marvel money. Yeah, these are like indie films.
No, but it's getting significantly cheaper to do it, and it's happening more often, right? So it's not an impossibility, but making Chloe, who's now in her 20s, make her look 13 is just, or younger. Well,
no,
is just
yeah,
not,
they would have to.
That's just not practical. You know?
It's not going to happen. The Kick-Ass series of films is dead.
It's really a shame. I don't know how she never got her own spinoff movie, especially after the second one.
Last year, it was optioned for a TV show. So,
how would that work? Like, you mean like on an HBO kind
of
thing?
Yeah, because there's been a continuation of the comics, so they can.
Well, sorry, I meant it couldn't be like cable. Like, there's no way you're putting that on the CBS.
No,
because like,
I mean, it has the same hyper-violence as the director's cut of Watchmen. There's no reason why HBO couldn't handle it. Game of Thrones was on the exact same level of violence. Not, of course, sex. Game of Thrones is much, much more intense with sex.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, HBO could handle it. Showtime, Cinemax. AMC would probably try, or FX could probably try, but it's hyper violence. It's ultra violence.
It's a cartoon. The most cartoony thing about it is the violence. Yeah,
absolutely. So. The amount of blood that just spills out, how many broken bones people get.
Limbs.
It's, yeah. So
good times.
So I am curious, you know, you guys haven't seen this movie, I'm assuming, since you saw it back when it came out.
What, Kick-Ass?
Yeah.
This was probably the third time I watched it, because I bought it a while back and I watched it when I bought it.
So, did you like it more watching it now, or did you like it more originally?
That's a good question.
I mean, because now we have so more. Much more superhero in our lives, you know.
I liked it more originally.
Yeah.
There's some stuff that doesn't age very well.
I'm sure you're thinking of the same stuff.
Well, in the first movie, there's a lot of homophobia.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't sit very well with me. It reads differently. It's the same as going back and watching the Bill and Ted movies. You try and get the essence of it, but when the robots say the F word, it just kind of takes you back, like, whoa, I'm not used to that anymore.
At least in this one, in the second movie, they kind of addressed that.
They did.
And I thought
Absolutely.
That was actually handled really well. Mm-hmm. I actually forgot how much kind of homophobic language was used in the first movie. But when I went back and watched it again, I was like, oh, okay.
It's just crazy how much society has changed their opinion about which words are acceptable in 9 years.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long, really. Yeah. It felt like it was like 2003, 2002 that was still.
Well, it's one of those movies because it wasn't a big box office blockbuster kind of thing. Maybe they felt like they needed to be edgier or be more controversial to bring people to the theater.
It's very possible.
I think there was plenty of controversy already around Hit Girl. I mean, I don't know if you remember when that movie came out, but there was moms activist groups like, what are you doing to my little babies?
Her mom was always on set, and her mom said that she didn't want her saying the F or C word. Originally, it was in her contract, so they weren't going to do it. Her mom got more comfortable with the director, with Nick Cage, and she was like, you know what, let's try a cut where she does say it. And see how it goes. Her mom got to see playbacks and was just like, yeah, I approve of this. So Matthew Vaughn and Chloe's mom worked hand in hand. And Chloe's mom knows how to raise her own kids. She doesn't need white Carols from the Midwest up in arms over Karens. It. Carols, Karens.
I would say they're more Karens than Carols. But I mean,
you think so? I don't know. They both want to talk to my manager.
The whole thing seemed kind of silly to me because there's been kids around her age in other significantly violent and adult productions. I mean, there's Terminator 2, for example. You've got where, you know, Natalie Portman started her career with The Professional. And
it's a very similar situation.
So, yeah, this wasn't the first time it had ever happened before. And at least it was like comic booky type stuff. You know, she was playing a superhero, you know, versus like the little John Connor in T2 is nothing but like a loser little petty thief who curses all the time.
Right, of course.
One thing I did love about the direction they went with their character is that you can tell in that first movie she relishes this. Mm-hmm. Like
she's
you know, when you first see her save Dave and she chops the guy's leg off and she turns around and smiles at Kick-Ass, it's like you can tell she just loves this, and it really came across. And honestly, it was probably Chloe really enjoying doing this crazy adult stuff as a kid, you know.
Well, first of all, learning those skills as a kid.
Yeah, ballet song. I mean,
right. Yeah. You know, that's going to do
all kinds of cool stuff.
Really help her out later on. It probably has, you know.
So other things in the first movie before we move on really to the second one, which was the really what we're focusing on.
Well, the first one had a much better climax, in my opinion. The fight scenes in the D'Amico building, in their home and the apartment, like how it went from
in the warehouse.
Yeah.
All the fight scenes in that movie, all the stunt scenes were just wonderful.
The hand-to-hand combat was great. The
gunplay
was fantastic. The knife play. And then the ridiculousness of the jetpack with Gatling guns and the bazooka.
When I saw that in theaters, I could not.
Right?
Like, but watching it now, going back and knowing how the movie goes, you could, like, there's so much focus on the bazooka throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's the one shot when early on when they're in the base or whatever, and it just focuses on the bazooka for like 5 seconds. And now if I went and saw that movie brand new, I'd be like, that bazooka is going to be something.
Yeah,
later.
That's
but then
thing.
It didn't really mean anything.
I actually didn't pay attention to that. I didn't notice it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was kind of funny. One thing we haven't hit on the first movie before we move on, I think is really worth noting. Is the soundtrack.
I
love the soundtrack in that movie. I thought the way, like, Hit Girl didn't really have a theme so much as she had, like, some songs that were, like, really strong. Every time I hear those songs now, I think of those sequences.
I will say that, like, so it opens her coming in down the hallway with all the books and everything. Mm-hmm. With the beginning notes of Kryptonite, and then it turns into Joan Jett's Bad Reputation, and I was like, thank goodness, because I just turned to Derek and I was like, God, I hate Three Doors Down, like, it's so bad.
But Bad Reputation was such a perfect song for that scene, and such a cool song.
Joan Jett needs to, like, play behind most fight sequences, in my opinion.
And Kick-Ass's theme is super recognizable.
It's
to
really
me
good.
Too.
The Kick-Ass movies feel like there's like a subgenre that includes the Kick-Ass movies, Scott Pilgrim, and Kingsman, right?
Which I like all those movies. So yeah,
I'm sure there's some others.
There's like Red and Red
right.
Two.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
Those were hilarious.
But like, I feel like they belong in a separate category almost from other movies because just tonally, there's something about the way they're shot, about the way they're choreographed, the way the music plays into it that's just different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, especially from other superhero movies.
Yeah, I agree, and I love that about all of those movies.
Yeah,
it's something I really appreciate.
But there's a lot of really good things about the first one. I like Red Mist. I think it's a fun concept that, you know, he really wants to be a superhero and he's trying to use this as an excuse
to become
a superhero.
Yeah.
And
the thing with Christopher Mintz-Plasse as an actor, and I feel really bad about him. Some of the other actors that worked with him in the same movies or ran in similar circles have this problem too. Is I never see him as his character. He's always Christopher Mintz-Plasse for me. And this one was a little bit better. I saw him more as Red Mist and the motherfucker, but it's still, you're still McLovin. You're still
Augie. But that's fine because, like,
role models. Like, Augie. Right? Like, the LARPer.
But I mean, it worked in this case because the characters are fairly, like, I mean, they're all kind of, you know, timid.
Well, Nick Cage usually has that problem too. Like, he's just Nick Cage and everything, but this, he was an actual character.
Yeah.
And he changed his voice, he changed his mannerisms. He was not just Nick Cage. So it shows you that Nick Cage does have talent. Some movies he just phones in and he plays himself and he collects his paycheck, and other movies he shows up and he brings it.
Sometimes they just want that, though.
Yeah.
You know, like,
they're like, we want a Nick Cage type. Well, can we get Nick Cage? Probably. Let's try.
Right. Like Meet the Fockers or whatever. Right. Like, they just wanted Robert De Niro to be Robert De Niro.
That's it.
You know, they were like, he wasn't like phoning it in. They just wanted him to be himself.
Well, at that time, it was also set as a precedent because he had already done Analyze This and Analyze That. So he already had comedy under his belt. Was before the Analyze This, it was not a thing. He was always a gangster. So
yeah, I just meant sometimes they're hired just because they want
it's
that person.
Why
there,
people
know?
Continue to go back to these 80s action stars. Bruce Willis keeps getting action roles, even though every single stunt of his takes 20 cuts now to get from one step to the second.
And apparently he's a huge douche.
Yeah, he just gets douchier every movie. People
I'm more of a Schwarzenegger Stallone guy personally.
We know
their cuts are really bad too.
We know.
Liam Neeson's are so bad. If you watch any of the Taken movies, anytime he like jumps a fence, there's like seven cuts between one action.
I believe it. So should we hit up on the second
one
a
little
bit?
Let's talk about Jim Carrey and how he did a very similar thing as Nick Cage. Like, he created a whole personality for this one character.
Colonel Stars and Stripes.
Well, God, he's so wonderful.
Jim Carrey actually, I think, has done that more than he hasn't at this point in
his
career.
I agree. Like,
people
but
still
at the time this came out, it was not as common.
I mean, he had already done The Truman Show. He had already done
Eternal Sunshine of the Majestic. Number 23.
Like, he had already done big stuff that, like, people still, for some reason, remember him as Liar, Liar, and Ace Ventura, right? And Dumb and Dumber. That's what they remember him as. But he's done a lot more significantly better material where he has had to do that, where he has had to create a character that is very unique.
Aside from Hit Girl, Colonel Stars and Stripes was the second best thing. Not even, like, that much of a low step to get to. He was wonderful.
His facial prosthetics were subtle, but they really did make him look different. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing how much some subtle changes.
I like
his hair.
Yeah.
Giving
his
him
hair
the
cool.
muscle suit. Too. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. His relationship with the dog, even.
Schwanz.
I do like that there is that line, though, too, when the motherfucker shows up with the "I'm going to kill a dog."
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, but cut his head off.
Right? I'm so glad that they...
There's a line.
They acknowledge that.
Okay, you don't cross it because then John Wick comes after
you.
And nobody wants that. Maybe that exists. John Wick's in the same universe as Kick-Ass.
But his character had a lot more depth than you really expected it to. He's a mafia, ex-mafia hitman that became a born-again Christian. Doesn't want people cursing around him. But he's going to throw a bottle in the air and smash it in your face with a baseball, well, not a baseball bat, but some sort of club.
If you're a bad person.
Yes,
if you're not a bad
exactly.
person, he's going to go to the soup kitchen and help feed you.
Yeah, and
right?
I love that scene,
Such
too.
Such a cool idea.
So good.
That message.
He got them to do Good Samaritan work as well.
That message of people should get what they deserve doesn't have to be a negative connotation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No superhero movie does that.
Right.
Nobody does it. And yeah, you've got, you know, the saving cats and trees and people from fires and stuff like that.
I actually hate the saving cats and trees. Like, that's the only thing we remember. Like, Superman did that once in one comic and once in one movie, and that's the good thing we latch onto. Cats can get down, guys.
I was
like,
when they get hungry.
I was purposely picking a cliche. But
I know that's.
I just
sorry,
mean that
it's my rant for the day.
You never see the superheroes actually like volunteering and doing charity work.
Yeah,
which is what they did in.
Not
this.
Even in the MCU. They're
none of the big shots do that, and I thought that was really really cool because at the end of the day, they are normal people.
Right.
None of them are actually superpowered. So,
Hit Girl maybe. Close,
she's the closest thing to it.
Well, and Mother Russia.
Oh yeah. Well, talking about Jim Carrey, I don't know how much you guys remember about when this movie came out.
Yes.
But when this movie came out, right
Sandy
when
Hook
the
happened.
Yes, and right when the promotion was about to start for it, Jim Carrey really went off about violence in movies. And how they're responsible for how youth are turning out and things like that. And this is right when this movie is about to start pushing for its release, you know, promoting for its release. It was a really weird time. And I feel like that probably helped the movie more than it hurt it. Like,
I will tell you, it kind of soured me on the idea because I'm a huge Jim Carrey fan. I absolutely love him. And when he came out and said all of that, my first thought was, well, maybe I shouldn't bother to go see it then, you know, because if it's not something he's proud of, like I might have seen all of his movies at this point, but to know that he wasn't proud of that movie, I'd never heard him say that before,
which that's really disappointing because he should be proud of it because what he did with that character was really great. You know?
I get the social responsibility because you have these shooters coming out and saying that they were inspired by these movies. So we can't sit here anymore and say that our pop culture doesn't feed into it. But we also know that there's a huge mental health aspect in the environment you grow up in and what you're available to. Like, it's not just one thing. It's a lot of things put together. Yeah. And
But I thought his character was a big proponent against violence in the movie.
Too.
I mean, because they show him in the soup kitchen scene, and they show him he carries a gun that's not loaded.
I get it, though, that it's the most violent movie he's ever done
sure.
by a pretty big margin.
Yeah.
And I get how he seems in his personal life to be a pretty raw, emotional guy. And the whole thing probably hit him really hard. And he thought, what if it is a factor? And what if my role is contributing to it? And I can respect that concern of not wanting to be a negative influence.
Right.
And you on know? The flip side, his coworkers, his co-stars were very disappointed in him. They were pretty angry. They thought his statement was exaggerating the point and really the disconnect was unnecessary.
They
so...
were trying to do damage control pretty...
Absolutely. I mean, I so they have valid point points
actually
too.
Said, don't go see this
yeah,
movie.
He had valid... Like, they had valid points too. They worked really hard and they... That movie... We didn't get a Kick-Ass 3 because Kick-Ass 2 didn't make money.
Right.
It bombed so hard. But at the same time, people saw it. It was the second most pirated movie of that year. So people stole that instead of buying a ticket. And that suffers. We don't get the content we want. If you want your favorite franchise to continue, you have to support it financially. They don't care about your tweets.
Well, nowadays they actually like look at the number of torrented and downloaded files to determine the success of a movie. They don't count it in the box office or anything,
right.
But they do. Like, that's a reported figure for a lot of studios.
When you talk about like what does get a sequel and things,
yeah.
And to your point about the box office for a minute, like let's talk about how dismally bad it actually was.
It was so bad.
Kick-Ass 2's lifetime domestic gross was 28.8 million lifetime.
That's not good,
right? And we're talking about how, we talked earlier at the beginning of the show how bad Men in Black International's opening weekend was, and its opening weekend was still more.
To be fair, I imagine the CGI or the budget for Men in Black is going to be a lot higher.
Yes,
oh, I bet.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I'm talking. But, yeah. But like for lifetime gross, its opening weekend, you know, was 13. So it didn't even make. It made more than almost. It made less than half its money, I guess, opening weekend. So that's probably pretty average, I would imagine. But, I mean, the first one didn't even break 50.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, these weren't big money makers. But if you worked on the film, you know, you have to think that, you know, maybe you're getting kickbacks in the, you know, on, not kickbacks, a back end, you know, for ticket sales or home video sales. Or maybe you wanted that third movie, you know, to continue your career. And...
It was a little bit of a dick move for Jim Carrey, too, because he was already established at this point, right? Like, and you had a lot of young actors in these movies that were not necessarily, like, big yet.
In the second movie, he's by far the biggest name. Not even close.
The likelihood that Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Chloe Moretz, has careers that rival the success of most of Jim Carrey's films is still very unlikely. Even though they're both still working, they both still get decent roles with high-paying, big, in-your-face roles. Like, it doesn't matter. They may not be known for iconic characters or, like, that legendary status.
Well, that movie could have affected their career and shut them down. Like, that was... Because Jim Carrey, if that movie was bad and bombed, then... Which it wasn't bad, but it did bomb. That's not going to affect his career at all.
Well, let's look
right?
at...
But those other ones, they didn't have nearly the amount of success at that time that Jim Carrey had. So that could have easily ended several careers.
It may well have. So let's look at Donald Faison, who had most...
I'm sure you loved seeing him.
Man, I love
He's
him
so
wonderful. Much.
But let's face it, he had most of his movie roles in the 90s, and this was his first big one.
Yeah, playing a superhero.
And his career went back to just TV at the time. Now, that's not a bad thing. He's a wonderful TV actor, but movies pay more. And movies don't get canceled right away. So this could have halted his career.
Well, I mean, look.
We haven't seen Christopher Mintz-Plasse really either.
Aaron hasn't really done squat.
I mean, he was Quicksilver, but that's about it.
What?
In your Aaron Taylor Johnson, he was Quicksilver in the MCU.
Yeah.
Right, but like...
And in Godzilla.
But that's it.
Yeah. He really hasn't done much.
That's
yeah.
what we're saying. That's,
yeah.
Like
he hasn't...
Those are big profile roles, but they're not like Jim Carrey level. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And the thing is, I mean, both of those two roles came the following year, so he was probably already under contract
right.
at that point. So if you look after 2014, I guess... Oh, well, my bad. He's actually... I forgot that he's uncredited in Winter Soldier. So 2015 is when Ultron was. But after that, he was in nothing. I mean, you know, so
yeah.
that his career didn't really take off. Chloe's done all right.
But Christopher Mintz-Plasse hasn't, and mm-hmm. Donald Faison hasn't, and Clark Duke really hasn't. So, you know, the Evan Peters.
He's about the only one. Well, he wasn't in the second one.
Right. No, he didn't come back.
His recasting was very jarring for me because we were both like, is he supposed to be the same character? Is this a new friend? Because I couldn't get Evan Peters. Same with Marcus's role. I have no, there's a reason why Evan Peters, like, he got picked up for American Horror Story at that time.
Right.
But
it could have been a scheduling thing. You know, it wasn't a big enough role for them to adjust filming schedules for originally.
Absolutely. I just don't know why Marcus was redone.
That's what I mean. It was probably a scheduling thing, and his character was so minor in the first film.
Got it.
That it wasn't worth scheduling problems.
Morris Chestnut is, in fact, a better actor. So, Ellie, Marcus was a bigger role. It had to be in the second one.
Yeah.
So, I am happier that they got a more prolific actor. This guy has done TV and movies and has been around longer.
So, speaking of Todd's character for a minute, it's one of the few things in the second movie that really bothered me, is that there are zero consequences to him totally turning in
his
all
friend.
Of the good
getting
guys.
Getting his dad killed. Yeah,
yeah, like, mm-hmm. zero consequences. Nothing happens. Like, yeah. Kick-Ass's dad is straight up murdered in jail for covering for his son. And
he was supposed to be released like in a few hours.
Like, nothing
like,
happens
was one
for
day.
That.
And
that bothered me. Like, because yeah. you made a point of like giving him a costume that's similar to Kick-Ass's. You have a whole conversation about the names. You bring him into the big lair. Right. And then nothing. Everything's fine. It's cool. We're all good.
It was a redemption story.
That's not a redemption story. That's, we need a way to make this stuff
he
work.
He fought with the good guys. You know? Again, so.
That's, we forgot to write this in.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That bothered me. That's
too
one of my
focused big... on the shark eating his genitals.
That's one of my gripes in the movie.
What did you guys think of, like, the crew of heroes? You
I
had Insect Man, right? And then you had the two parents that their kid had gone missing.
Yeah.
And you had
they
Dr.
were pretty
Gravity.
Good. They were pretty good.
And Night Bitch.
Night Bitch.
Yeah. I actually really liked them. I thought it was all coming from a really good place, and they were good
realistic
additions.
Reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Donald Faison was my favorite, the professor,
yeah.
But that's a little biased.
The parents were just so wonderful, and I kept waiting for them to be the ones who were going to get killed off, to be completely honest, because they're easily the, you know, cheapest targets and
right.
the most gut punching. I actually didn't expect Jim Carrey to be killed off at the beginning of the second act. It's not even
he doesn't get a lot of time.
No,
in his role, no.
So I wasn't expecting that. I thought it was going to be the parents, because Insect Man wouldn't have really affected you. But you hear that you lose both of them, and that's.
I think killing off the parents would have been.
I'm not saying it would have been a best.
I think it would have been, I'm saying I think it would have been too much. A bit much.
I just. Thought that's how it was gonna go, and it was gonna be really terrible, like some sort of
I did like that when they were gonna go into like the big fight that they were like, you know, we didn't sign up to join a gang fight or something like that, you know, and they were the ones that wanted to go to the soup kitchens, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right,
you know, that I loved that about their character.
What
about the bad guys, the group of bad guys?
I mean, they were impressive. Of course, it was amazing seeing Wong as the pimp.
Yeah.
The leader of the prostitution ring. And then, oh God, I'm forgetting. I know his real name, Daniel Kaluuya, but he was in, you know, Get Out, of course, when he had his big break, and then Black Panther like six
yeah.
months later. So it was a little jarring to see them because I'm not used to seeing them in previous stuff. They just kind of emerge. So
I didn't really like the bad guys.
Really?
The scene in the neighborhood with the cop cars, I felt was just so over the top.
I see, but I like that about it because in the second one, they really leaned into how ridiculous. Because, I mean, at that point, the motherfucker or Red Mist, whatever, in between the two movies, he had really gone off the deep end.
Sure.
He had.
And
sure.
they leaned into the comic book, like, ridiculousness more in the second one for the villains.
But, like,
the heroes, they didn't really
some
do
of it was
villains.
Just, some of it's stupidity, though. Like, okay, they destroy a cop car. Then they destroy a second cop car. Then they destroy a third cop car. And the fourth cop car does the exact same thing the first three cop cars did. Like, at some point...
It was to show Mother Russia and, like,
I know,
why
but
that
she's
was fun.
Getting... I loved Mother Russia.
I'm not saying I didn't like the character. I think the way that scene was written to show her off didn't work for me.
Okay.
It got too silly to the point where, like, at some point, these cops are just the worst cops that have ever had a job ever.
The city needs real superheroes. So, I mean, cops in that town are obviously not that good, but...
I don't know, after like four cars were destroyed and 10 men were down, maybe you should call in a helicopter with a sniper and take care of it that way.
That's kind of what I'm trying to say.
I am agreeing with you. Okay. I'm not arguing against you. I too think that the second movie had some superfluous scenes, but you know, I thought the scene with the motherfucker in jail meeting his uncle that we just now met, and like that was a useless scene in my opinion.
Who was from Game of Thrones. Yeah. I didn't realize that Marcy and I were like, where do we know that guy from?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why John Leguizamo's death had to happen. Red Mist and motherfucker, he was already on the crazy train. Like,
yeah, that storyline doesn't change anything.
He was trying to make you feel a little sympathetic, I think, for the motherfucker, but he didn't really.
But the way he handles the jail scene after the murder makes you think he's going to come back in and kill his uncle or something, not feel bad for him. It doesn't push any character along in any real way.
That's true.
I also thought it was unnecessary to show the results of the sex stick as much as
God, I love that.
I think
though.
You have to.
Oh, God, it's just so unnecessarily nasty. I signed up for blood. I signed up for a lot of it. I did not sign up for three girls literally vomiting and shitting themselves. I didn't sign up
but
for
don't
that.
You wish there were some girls that you picked that picked on you in high school that you could have done that to?
No, because girls didn't really pick on me in high school. I wish I could do it to some guys who would harass me too. You know,
it works on guys too.
Assault me and stuff. So that
I don't know. I thought that was a fun concept. I thought it was a cool way for...
He stops the movie, he turns to me, and he's like, you know there's real technology out there like that.
Stop the movie.
We pause movies all the time so we can talk. But that way we don't interrupt it. Yeah, anytime we talk.
I love that scene, though. Anyway. It was like Mean Girls. It reminded me of Mean Girls. Mean Girls was rated R.
But, like, the whole date ditch in the woods was a little too long. Like, some of the scenes... We're just a little too long. I loved her dance audition, though. Like, that was great.
Yeah, it was a cool scene.
Having to film that scene twice, one with the ninjas and one without, was pretty impressive that they got the cuts all correct.
Or the ninjas were there the whole time, but they're ninjas,
You didn't know. Right? They were hiding. God. Smoke bombs.
It's 9 Smoke o'clock. Bombs. Let's end this shenanigans.
No, there's still plenty of stuff to talk about.
Well, we haven't talked about the climax at all, the big end fight.
That was fun. So we rented it on Amazon, and there's a much longer extended scene. 10 times better. Yeah. I'm actually really upset they cut that scene down.
The extended cut includes the dog. The dog returns, and just the way the fight gets started, you get to see more of the heroes up close and stuff like that. And it's a much cooler way to start the fight.
Yeah, Dr. Gravity's getting a little impatient. He's like, is this going to pop off or what?
Right, which is pretty great. But what I think is really kind of funny about this scene is it has really tight parallels to the first one's final fight, where Hit Girl's really doing all of the work fighting the real bad guy.
Right. And everybody else is just like, yeah.
Kick-Ass is like on the roof trading crappy punches, you know?
Right. He fully admits at the beginning that he's her Robin, and she's like, who wants to be Robin? And he's like, man, Robin's a badass. Yeah. Like,
and Robin is. Like, in a lot of cases, he is.
All 30 of them have been.
Like, other than like the Adam West version, he's been a pretty big badass in every single one.
It's true. So I'm completely down for Kick-Ass recognizing his role in this.
I like the parallels though. Mm-hmm. Like, really not much has really changed between the two films, right? They're still the exact same people. Like, he might be a slightly better fighter now and he can do pull-ups, but he's no Hit Girl.
Yeah.
So.
No salmon ladder, no care.
No salmon ladder.
Wasn't
a thing yet.
As soon as they show
the
injectables on the wall, I was like, I bet that's like PCP. I highly doubt.
I mean, they were setting it up to be cyanide, obviously.
Absolutely.
I never believed that for a second, though.
Yeah.
Because it never occurred to me that Big Daddy would want to do that to himself or have his daughter do that. And so I assumed it had to be some type of crazy drug. Maybe it would fake a death, or maybe it would be the adrenaline, but there's no way that was like a cyanide capsule.
Thought it was worse than adrenaline. I thought it was like
straight up PCP is worse than adrenaline.
PCP, they don't give you that when your heart stops.
Not generally, no.
I gotta say, I'm a little disappointed that the motherfucker survives the shark attack.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't seem likely. And I guess the idea would be that he would
return at some point. Well, in the normal cut, he doesn't.
What?
In the regular version of that fight scene, he does not. And I'm pretty sure in the theatrical cut.
It was the end of credits scene. He's
Not the end of credits scene, is it?
Yeah, it was post-credit at the scene? Very end of the credits. He is in his hospital room with no limbs, no arms. And he says
apparently
that
I did not watch through the credits.
He said that he got his dick cut off and nobody will help him get water. He's just like struggling to lean forward and get a sip of water.
So, he's in pretty rough shape.
Yeah.
Clearly.
He was supposed to be the villain in the third movie again. Right.
Which we'll never see, but
well, they set up a lot of stuff for another movie. Absolutely. Right, like they set up so my biggest problem with this movie,
their relationship,
the like kiss at the end. Yeah, I hated that from the day the movie came out, but whatever. They set up Hit Girl leaving off on her own as another movie. They set up Kick-Ass with like his Iron Man suit as another movie, and then apparently this also.
Well, let's not forget that Aaron Taylor Johnson is a grown man. He is married with a stepchild at this point. His life is completely different, and they still have him kiss an underage girl. So legally, that bothered me a lot, but in universe, it made sense to me since she was already checking him out a few times that she would have the hormones.
Right.
But like, well, he should have backed away.
In context of the movie, right, you have a situation where she's never kissed anybody before, right? And
she's starting to have these feelings.
She wants to do that and she trusts him.
Yeah.
And that's who she wants to have her first kiss with, is with somebody that she trusts. Right. Someone that she actually cares about. So the character thing is fine. The real world implications of that are weird.
Yeah.
There's no way around that.
Go look up Aaron Taylor Johnson's wife. She's like 80 years older than him. It's very...
So maybe he thought it was fine then.
it's very Harold and Maude. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean...
He got jacked at the end of that too.
Oh
he
my
was
God.
Huge.
For those two scenes without his shirt, then he's insanely huge. Like, way to go, guy.
Like, yeah,
good
like
for
this
you,
is
man.
For... You're not on the MCU diet or the DC, you know... trainers die, and he didn't have that stuff. This was on probably on his own with maybe like whatever they could afford for a trainer, and that dude got big. So yeah. If they ever
huge
cast him in another superhero role,
you
I would
mean
be,
like Quicksilver.
I well you know what I mean, like one that actually requires you to be a big dude, I would be all about it. He can
fair
clearly
so should he
up.
Be Batman.
I would have been okay with it, honestly. I think he's a good actor in general, and
I just don't find him very like charming.
Yeah,
I don't know why I have to
for Batman,
root for him even as Kick-Ass. I'm like, what? You're
but I don't think you're,
a geek.
I don't think you're supposed to. I don't know, there's it's a weird movie, and I don't think Hit Girl is the real star of both of the movies, and Kick-Ass is the title and the main character. But it's like what I like about Big Trouble in Little China, he's clearly the sidekick. He is not the hero. And there's not so many movies out there that are told from the perspective of a sidekick.
That's true.
But you think about, like, he wants to do the right thing. He wants to be a good person. He wants to better the world. He's just not the best at it. Right.
And the first time he does it, he literally gets shanked and run over by a car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of hard to watch at times, I think, is part of the problem. You know, because he doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the support. That's kind of the cool thing in the second movie. He's got a club around him now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, of people to support
like-minded
him.
People.
So, right. Yeah. And that kind of changes the tone of things. But the end fight's cool. I like the end fight.
I do too.
Personally. I think it was a lot of fun. The extended stuff was neat. But
For that scene. The rest of the scenes, I'm actually really happy they cut.
Right. All right. Are there any other things we should touch on then before we wrap up this?
I don't think so.
No, I think we
good
covered
time.
Pretty much everything.
Okay. So any changes on your ratings for these at all?
No. It's still like B+, B-, yeah.
For the first one and second one?
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good to me then. So that's it then for this. This was our Fill Our Holes retro review. This was Ryan's pick, which means that next month in July is my pick. So.
Yay.
Yeah.
What sci-fi movie are you going to make?
I promise it will not be classic science fiction.
Okay.
I haven't picked the movie yet, but it's not classic science fiction. I was going to go with something old again, but I'm going to give you guys a break.
Well, next one, I'm going to go with a musical, and you guys can deal with it.
If it's I've never seen Little Shop of Horrors, so we should. I'm just kidding. I love that movie. I just want to watch it again.
What?
Have you ever seen the original one?
No, but I don't really have much interest in it after seeing the
it's not good.
One.
No.
It's not
like, even if you told me it was amazing, like, how are you going to beat the cast that was in the...
The first one's not even a musical.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, then, yeah, so it's a totally different movie. Completely different.
Okay, so next week we're going to talk Suicide Squad 2. We're going to kind of pitch possible storylines they can go after. We'll remind you of who all has been cast, who all has been announced as appearing in the film, and where they could go from there. So it won't just be like our normal pitches. We'll kind of work things out together. And then the week after that is Derek's Fill Your Holes. So join us, of course, every Tuesday on Twitch at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, twitch.tv/heroespodcast. Listen to the podcast every Thursday, right, on most podcast players, including Apple Music and Spotify and Spreaker and Google Play and, you know, whatever, all other ones, I guess. Whatever's left.
Just let her keep going.
And then, of course, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Heroes Podcast. You can also follow Screen Heroes specifically on Twitter at Screen Heroes Pod. You can follow Ryan at Buster Props on Instagram and Facebook. You can follow Derek at The Star Trek Dude on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And you can follow me, Siren Ray, on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Vero, apparently. Yep. Yes. Yep.
With Zack Snyder.
Yes.
just the two of them hanging out, trading behind the scenes photos from the Snyder cut.
Well, he's like, here's a picture of Darkseid, right? And I'm like, here's a picture from my Domino photo shoot.
Here's a picture of my dog.
Equal content.
You don't just show, like, oh, here's my Darkseid from the Ray cut.
Get out of here. All right, guys, we'll see you next week to talk Suicide Squad. Bye. You're ridiculous. Here's the Ray cut.